just under 400 long-form content influencers a month is a super challenging thing. It almost killed us.
Really?
It was developing a very, very thorough system for finding, analyzing, and partnering with content creators.
This is Kelly Thornton, co-founder and CEO of the men's skincare company, Tiege Hanley.
Like every time the lights go off, we want to be that brand that's like buzzing around that P&G and Old Spice is trying to whack at, but they can't find us.
We have a treat for you, Tiege Hanley, and the synergy that happened between Tiege Hanley and Alpha M.
Get into these business relationships, having a very concise conversation up front is critical. And if you don't like what you hear at that point, it's probably not going to change.
He's just throwing money at her because he believes that providing is throwing money.
We're all learning this together, how to be the best type of men we can be today. Being a provider is not enough.
Wow, that's a big statement. Being a provider is not enough. Damn.
Do not marry crazy.
Hello and welcome to Hustle for Everything podcast. This is a podcast where you receive stories, tips, and tactics from entrepreneurs who have done it. I'm Alex, and today we have a treat for you. Now, one thing we want to get out of this episode is, you know, getting the behind the scenes story of, you know, Tiege Hanley and the synergy that happened between Tiege Hanley and Erin Marino, aka Alpha M. You know, that's one big part of the story. But another part that we're going to talk about is masculinity, you know, and diving into what that means in this modern day era, because, you know, there's a lot of things going on when it comes to the toxic masculinity. You know, dealing with the challenges of entrepreneurship and masculinity at the same time. So it's going to be an interesting conversation. You know, strap in. If you have some tea, go get some tea, you know, and you know, put this in the background. And let's vibe out. All right. Kelly, how you doing, man?
Great. I'm super excited about the topics you just laid out. Very passionate about men and how they think about themselves and their lives. Mm-hmm. Very excited about to talk about influencer marketing and my business partner and friend Erin Marino. So let's get after it.
Most definitely, man. And with your product, it was actually, so first off, thank you for sending the product to me. I really appreciate that, you know. You're the first guest to send product before the episode, you know. So that really made me respect you more than regular.
Thank you.
And it was a bit overwhelming, I won't lie to you, you know, because the box is quite small from looking at it, like, at a delivery perspective. And then opening it up and seeing, like, 5-6 products, you're like, whoa. Now, when did you get started with Tiege Hanley? This podcast is brought to you by Narai Cellars Wine, one of the only Black-owned wine companies in Canada. So not only are you supporting the show, but you're supporting Black ownership. Now, who is Narai Cellars Wine? They have 10 years of experience in winemaking. So what we're going to do is going to hit the link below and visit naraicellars.ca and try the wine for yourself. Let's get back into the show.
You know, it became a strong interest to me around 2014. And we actually launched a version of Tiege Hanley at our same URL, Tiege.com, in 2015. Most people don't know that story, but it didn't do well for us. Conceptually, it was similar to what we're doing today. There's a few major differences, and it didn't do well for us. So that lasted roughly 60 days or so.
Really? So what was not working?
Well, so first off, going back to your point about product and product quality, you know, my chief product officer, Fadi Murad, who's been in skincare his entire career, including a decade with Estee Lauder and Dollar Shave Club and Bumble and Bumble and other hair care companies. He says, you know, Leonard Lauder used to say you can sell any product once, but you need a great product to sell it more than once. And so I think having great products is really, you know, It almost seems kind of a silly thing to say, but it's really critical to having a successful business. Early on, we were not selling at TV1. We were not selling our product. We were selling other companies' products in a skincare routine. And while they were highly curated, I actually found out about most of these brands overseas. They were from overseas. You could still find them. So we weren't really, there wasn't anything really unique. I mean, we were trying to educate guys and sell them a skincare system, but they weren't, it wasn't our brand and it wasn't a product that couldn't be found elsewhere. So it didn't work. And then we had one other huge problem. We had no voice in the market. We were just another company out there saying, hey, we want to help you with your skincare. So we had no voice in the market.
No, that's big. You know, I heard this phrase that, you know, beginner entrepreneurs solve for a passion, you know, second time entrepreneurs solve for a problem, and then third time entrepreneurs solve for distribution, you know.
There you go.
And love it. I think that kind of aligns with you, you know, because with you aligning with Aaron Marino, I think that kind of solved that for you, where the distribution really just hit and you could really count on that almost borderline free distribution because he's a partner in the company. So you can kind of count on
let's
that.
Let's talk about that. It's a very interesting concept. If you don't mind, I am going to challenge you on that comment.
Let's do it.
Because there's absolutely nothing free about my partnership with Aaron or what he brought to the table. I can't stress enough the value that he brought to Teach. Teach V1 had no voice in the market. We reached out to Aaron because we wanted to find someone that could help us with a voice. We just got super lucky that Aaron was very interested in the actual industry, in skincare and men, and was willing to become a partner. He brought us a voice. Every customer that he helped us connect with was not free. It was paid for with bars of gold. And those bars of gold were equity in our business. So he received equity for his contribution to growing this business. But I think it's an interesting point, Alex, because, and so every customer that we earned through Aaron we paid for dearly. Money well spent. If I could do it all again, I would spend it in the exact same way. I didn't know what I know now. If you're raising money in the business, you are going out and you are technically selling some of your equity in exchange for capital. You then have a partner in the business who's an equity partner in the business. You have him or her as a partner, and you have equity capital in your hand, but you still have no customers.
Mm-hmm.
You have cash, but you have no customers. Yeah. And you need to figure out how to allocate those capital resources in a way that's going to help your business grow. With Aaron, my partnership with Aaron, I didn't have cash in my hand from Aaron. He received equity, and in exchange, I received customers. A very different dynamic than the way traditionally people think about raising capital. I didn't have it in those terms in my mind originally, but that's exactly what happened. And going back, I would, and any of your listeners, you know, if they think about it in this way, if your choice is to go out and sell some of your company, that's what you're doing. You're selling it to somebody who's becoming a partner. They're giving you capital in exchange, and then you have to deploy that capital versus going out and converting that capital directly into sales, aka having a voice in the market. I highly recommend option number two.
Most definitely. It's such a strategic move, you know, because you can get investment from, you know, people who have the money, but the cachet, the audience that comes with it is totally different, you know? It's very similar to Prime, you know, where you could have a Gatorade drink, but how to compete in the marketplace and have somebody like a Logan Paul or a KSI is, you can't put a number on it. It's worth its weight in gold, you know, because those people are going to champion you when you're not around, you know? And with Aaron, his YouTube channel has been vetted for years. You know, I think it's like 6 million followers or 6 million subscribers. You know,
something over there.
Yeah. So I think the value in that is incredible. So yeah, I definitely don't think free is the right word at all. I think strategic alignment is really the right word, you know.
Now we agree.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. Now, when it comes to having that, there is a line where you can reach critical mass within the influencer, you know, equity partner relationship. You know, when you reach that stage, what is the next step to go forward from that?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. This is one of the biggest challenges that we faced as an organization. One of two or so biggest challenges. Because, you know, and this isn't a statement about specifically about Aaron. This is just, you know, a statement about growth and digital marketing and reaching plateaus. You know, you're always going to, at some point you're going to tap out a channel. And this is relevant, by the way, in like every single thing you do. We work with about almost just under 400 long-form content influencers a month. And the best ones have been with us for years. And at a certain point, you reach critical mass with those content creators. And it's just a natural evolution of a relationship with a content creator. Most of it is because you get to a certain point where they've talked about your product to their audience for a certain period of time. And there's an uptick in sales, and over time you kind of plateau, and then eventually it's kind of a, for each incremental, for you economics guys out there, for each incremental dollar you spend, your marginal return decreases. And that's what happens with someone, you know, like an Aaron. And so trying to figure out how to grow on top of that value that that person brings is really challenging. And it's further compounded by a decreasing marginal utility over time. And what I mean by that, again, I'm not picking on Aaron, but it doesn't matter if it's Aaron or anybody. Over time, not only will sales start to decrease from that content provider, but they'll actually, the rate of sales will decrease. So you might be doing 100 this month, and you might do 95 the next month and 85 the next month, but eventually it'll actually start, you know, dramatically decreasing. You'll go down to 75, 50, 30, 10, till the marginal increase is almost nothing. And so you have to figure out a way to build, sorry if I'm going in the weeds here, but you have to figure out a way to build on top of that. So not only do you want to go from 100 new customers to 120, but you have to replace the 5 that you were incrementally getting. You were getting 100 from him. Now you're only getting 95. So now you need to do 105 new customers on top of the 95 to make it up, and so forth and so on. So you need to continue to grow your business and find other channels to support the growth and to make up for the shortfall in revenue from, you know, from any main source of revenue prior. Is a super challenging thing and almost killed us.
Really? So how'd you make it through? Was it the 400 partners and the 400 content creating partners? And I want to dive into that part too, because I find that very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it was developing a very, very, very thorough system for finding, analyzing, and partnering with content creators, and then having a constant, having a process and a constant pipeline and a methodology to bring new content into your ecosystem on a regular basis. And then there's all kinds of other channels. So you need to, you know, you need to be good at programmatic channels, you know, Google, you need to be good at SEO, you need to be good at conversion optimization, affiliate, micro influencers, you know, paid social, on and on and on, referral. So you need to start developing expertise in each one of these other channels so that you have a portfolio approach to business, to your business, mm-hmm. because not every channel is going to perform well for you at any given time. This is a diversification of your investments, right? Same concept. You want a diversified mm-hmm. portfolio because where if you're, you know, have an agency, you want to have multiple clients. If you just have one client, that client goes out of business, you're effed, right? So mm-hmm. same concept.
No, so most definitely. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Continue to grow influencer, grow process, and diversify channels. That's how we did it.
Got you. That's very interesting, man. And going back to the partnership with Aaron, you know, I want to just, you know, make sure we cover the whole ground there before we move on. Because I think there's a lot of information for creators and business owners that are in that stage, you know, that are looking for the distribution and creators looking for that partner that makes sense, right? What could you say to the person that's looking for that partnership to make sure that everything is aligned perfectly? Because finding that could be really good or really bad. You know, we've seen some of those partnerships where it's like, what is going on here? You know, versus ones that do feel aligned, you know? I would love to get your opinion there.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much magic really happens there, Alex. I think luck plays a bit of a role, right place, right time, right person. Making sure that I would say this is the number one thing, because Aaron's not my only partner. I have another excellent partner. His name is Rob Hoxie. I went to high school with him, went to college. His career went one direction. My career went into another direction, and we just happened to meet back together professionally, not socially, with the development of Tej Hanley. But having great partnerships are making sure you're really aligned up front on what the short-term and long-term goals are. You know, if you know, it's just like any other relationship. If you're not aligned, and by the way, I experienced this firsthand. If you're not aligned up front, like, don't expect things to change. I mean, it's just like a relationship. Like, if you're upset because your partner is messy, you know, don't think your partner is going to change and all of a sudden become a neat freak in year five in your relationship. It doesn't, based on my experience, it doesn't really happen that way. You know, I mean, you can make incremental changes and be a little bit more neat, but you're not going to go from being a messy slob to a neat freak, you know, in 2 or 3 years. So I think, like, if, you know, when you get into these business relationships, you know, having a very concise conversation up front before you even get into the partnership about what expectations are, what they look like, and what each person is going to play is critical. And if you don't like what you hear at that point, like I said, you know, it's probably not going to change. And like the mm-hmm. things that Rob and Aaron and I were different on early on have been the same ever since. They've never really changed. We had clarity early on about how we were going to approach things, even if we were different on it. And we agreed to be different on some things early on, and it's never changed.
No, that's a big gem. Trust me. I've definitely learned a lot about that. All right. So let's close the button on Aaron Marino.
Sorry, man, if I unloaded there.
No. Honestly, that's perfect for our audience. You know, and perfect for me too. You know, I definitely, you know, can use some lessons when it comes to, you know, strategic partnerships and working with, you know, business partners. So, yeah, it's a huge element. Now, when it comes to those 400 influencers and creators you work with, right?
Yeah.
when do you feel like a micro influencer, for example, is ready to take on a brand and work with a brand? Is it a matter of follower count? Is it a matter of engagement? It's great to have somebody that's on the other side of it, because usually we talk to the influencers. You know, yes. It's good to hear your side of, you know, what do you look for to say that this creator is perfect for us?
Yeah. Well, you know, quality of content is really important. Like, we want really good, authentic quality of content. And so that's really important. And then usually if they're doing well, they're creating good content. And then, like, if the content needs to align with kind of like, and when I say align, I mean pretty loosely, like, it needs to align with kind of like what we're trying to accomplish. I mean, it may be talking about, you know, it may be talking about cars, you know, which isn't like perfectly aligned with us, but it could be, you know, it could be something related to guys and, you know, that they're taking care of their cars and that's an important part of their life or something, or, you know, something like this. So it needs to align with kind of like what our overarching mission is. The closer, the better. So closer is talk about a guy taking care of himself, working out, eating right, dating, getting a job, what to wear, these type of topics. So they need to create good content. It needs to kind of align with what we're talking about. And then they have to have great engagement with their audience. That's much more important than any other metric. And then lastly, they actually need to, you know, they actually need to, which is part of engagement, they need to be able to kind of like sell a product, right? I mean, we've worked with people that just are not really capable of selling product, and that's okay. You know, I mean, like, everybody's not the same. That's why they make 31 flavors of ice cream, right? But you got to be kind of good at selling a product, or else, you know, it's not going to work for us.
No, most definitely. Can I tell you about my favorite creative partnership you guys have done?
Sure.
Abba and Preach. Listen, I tell you.
Fresh, my man's 28 going on 80, and I don't want that to be you guys. And that's why today's sponsor, T.H. Henley, is coming in to save the day.
That has been the funniest ad I've ever seen on YouTube. Yep. You know, walk us through that decision that you made to give them the creator freedom, because I think that's a big part of some of the partnerships you've done, and that's a big gripe with creators. You know, being able just to talk freely about a brand, you know, and the decision that you made to let them talk freely.
Yeah, well, you know, like, so that is one of the secrets of any disruptor brand. Not, you know, not just T.H. Henley, but, you know, creative, disruptive brands can, you know, they have the freedom to do things that big brands can't do. I mean, we want to be the fly in the room to, you know, P&G and Old Spice, right? And like, every time the lights go off, we want to be that brand that's like buzzing around, that they're trying to, that the P&G and Old Spice is trying to whack at, but they can't find us, right? And the way we can do that is we make our own rules. We don't have the same legal hurdles and compliance hurdles and everything else that these brands do. And we really care about our content providers. Like, we really, really give a shit about them, and we want content providers to be talking about things that are really relevant to, you know, their audience. And you know, and I think as long, and by the way, we definitely have a line, you know, drawn that we won't cross. You know, we work with a content provider early on, and you know, and actually that content provider, who became hugely popular, I really don't want to say who it is, but became hugely popular. We created a lot of content early with them and we were actually became aware that content provider was doing things, you know, that we didn't feel was appropriate. They were doing things with, you know, with relationships that they had outside of their YouTube personality that we didn't feel comfortable with. I mean, it's just not appropriate. And so we made a choice, whether or not our consumers know that or not, about this person's personal life, you know, we just felt like it was inappropriate. If people are making good content and, you know, whatever they're doing in their personal lives, as long as they're, that's not like impacting our brand, I think like we're willing to take a lot of chances. We're willing to take a lot of chances and roll with content and see where it takes us. Ab and Preach makes like phenomenal content. I mean, their content's awesome. Yeah, I can understand how people may not always agree with the stuff that they're talking about, for sure. And there's a lot of other content providers that we work with that are like that, especially when you start talking, you know, hardcore men, right? And things that are going on in men's lives. Mm-hmm. You know, you can quickly get to, you know, some gray areas, right? Gray areas in terms of topics. And but we're willing to go there as long as the content providers themselves are not mean spirited and are truthful with their intent of their content.
You are Masai in the sense that you are the one choosing an all-star team to join your roster to perform at its peak. And with Marketer Hire, you can use it to have an all-star team of marketers to do your marketing for your business. Marketer Hire vets and qualifies entrepreneurs and marketers who want to have freelance gigs on the side so they can perform at a high level for small and medium-sized businesses. If that's you, hit the link below and sign up for a discovery call with the team, and they'll walk you through their process and get you started. And here's the thing. If you hit the link right now and sign up, because we are negotiators, because we are deal makers, we're giving you $500 off your first retainer. Actually, I lied. We're giving you $1,000 off your first retainer. I'm still lying. We are giving you $1,500 off your first retainer when you sign up with Marketer Hire using our link in the description below. So hit the link in our description and visit Marketer Hire, sign up, go through the type form, and book a marketer that is qualified today. Let's get back to the show. No, most definitely. Speaking of which, I would love to get your opinion on the red pill movement. You know, like as we segue into the masculinity discussion, you know, what has been some of the thoughts and feelings you've experienced with that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough one, right? Our audience is male. We speak male. And by the way, I'm not being cheeky there. Like you tell me you want me to come up with a women's line of skincare, I would tell you, we don't know how to talk women. We don't know how to talk to women. Like, that's just not in our DNA. Like, how to sell skincare to women? I don't know the first thing about that. I don't even know what these women brands are doing. Like, I just don't pay attention to it because it's different. You know, us dudes talk to dudes differently. We have the same basic language. It doesn't matter how old you are, where you live, what your, you know, race is. We talk about the same shit. Dude, if it's funny, we're talking about it. If it's sports related, we're talking about it. I could walk into a room with pretty much any guy and say, what do you feel like about the Ravens, you know, losing this weekend? And like, can you believe Philly's out, you know, Detroit's out, and the Ravens are out? And you and I can have at least a 30-minute conversation about that. You know, I mean, it's just common guy language. Women talk about other things. Like, I don't know about that shit. You know, we don't know that. So I think, like, you know, regarding the red pill movement, like we can relate to other guys and we can try to talk and have conversations about what it means to be a man today. I think we want to stay in our lane as much as we can. And our lane is about physically taking care of yourself. That's kind of our lane. Like, I think there's a mental aspect to that, but physically and mentally taking care of yourself is really important, right? So you better be working out, getting some level of exercise, whether that's just walking around the block every night or going to the gym, running, exercising. You better be eating right. You better be trying to get enough sleep every day, because if you can't sleep, you're tired, you're grumpy, you're a pain in the ass, not friendly, not nice to anybody. You know, you better be trying to work on improving yourself and basic grooming habits. You know, brush your teeth in the morning, wash your body, use something that's gonna, you're gonna feel good about yourself. use a moisturizer so your skin looks nice and you feel good about yourself and you're ready to go to work and kick ass every day. And that's where we're, that's our lane. So we're talking about that a lot. Mm-hmm.
Got you. You know, and when it comes to that lane, you know, a lot of things go into that. And it's interesting because the Red Pill movement, the Venn diagram has that in the circle, you know, but outside of that circle, there's a lot of other things that come with that as well, you know. And I think what's happening is, I think every generation has that, you know, where men hit a point where they reach self-actualization and they're like, all right, how can I improve myself? You know, how can I go and talk to women properly? Like, for example, in my generation, there was The Game, you know, by Neil Strauss. That was a huge book. You know, I remember reading that and thinking, oh, if I touch a girl from the back of my palm, it's less confronting. So it makes her feel more comfortable. And that was like a game changer, just to have somebody feel more comfortable around you, you know. And learning things that you didn't have a guy to walk you through was a huge milestone. And I think what the Red Pill movement is doing is providing that, but also providing a conduit for other things as well, you know, that can lead them astray when it comes to having healthy relationships and healthy masculinity, you know. Because I think one of the biggest things in our society right now is focusing on toxic masculinity, right?
Right.
What's been your experience there when it comes to like dealing with toxic masculinity, especially as a men's brand owner?
Yeah, you know, man, I like this topic. I want to be, you know, careful about how we talk about things. My personal opinion could be slightly different from our company and our brand position. You know, my personal opinion is that, you know, there has been a kind of an anti-male, there's been an anti-male conversation that I think is brewed for years that is somewhat of a, you know, of a manifestation of a movement for, you know, amongst women to have, you know, a femininity movement amongst women, that's tied into, you know, the idea of, you know, women's rights, and furthermore, just this concept of, you know, if are you or are you not a feminist, right? Mm-hmm. And if you just look up that definition, just flat out look up that definition, it basically just says that women should have equal opportunity to men. And, you know, if you ask me based on straight up on that definition, if I agree, am I a feminist? I would say absolutely. Absolutely. If the definition is that women should, you know, do you believe that women should have an equal opportunity to men? I would say absolutely. But then you got to dissect that. You know, you need to start looking at that and saying, you know, what exactly does that mean? Where don't women have equal opportunity to men? And I don't know the answer to that. It's a question. Where don't women have equal opportunity to men? That's one question out there. And then, you know, you really start wondering, is that really what feminists are all about? I mean, you know, do mothers and fathers want to send their daughters into combat? Do other men want their daughters carrying, you know, a 50-pound rifle and they're getting shot at? Do women want to climb, you know, telephone poles and work with high power voltage powers? I don't know. Do women, you know, want to pay for weddings, which is traditionally, or do men want to pay, you know, women want to pay for weddings? Is that which is traditionally something in society that the women's family tends to pay more for the cost of the wedding? I mean, is that, should that all be equal? Should the burden of that be equal? You know, should Should men get, you know, the same amount of paternity time as women? I mean, this is something that we're struggling with here at our company. And I made a joke of it to our accounting agency. We use a national accounting firm that most people know. And I sent him a note and he said, well, this guy's out on paternity leave for the next 3 months. And I sent a note back to him. He's a partner in the firm. It was a joke. And I said, well, geez, hey, is there a way that I can, can I get like a refund on, you know, my three children's, you know, paternity? Cause I didn't take that time. He actually responded back and said, well, if your company has a policy in place that allows for paternity leave before 2017, I said, no, Gordon, I was just joking. You know, I didn't take that time. I don't know, but my kids aren't worse for it. So there's all these things, right? I know I'm going down a rabbit hole here, Alex, but there's all these things that have men, you know, kind of questioning what our roles are, you know, and what femininity and what masculinity really means. I personally don't feel that there is really truly a thing of toxic masculinity in the way it's discussed today. I think there is toxic males, but it's a tough subject. I'll stop there.
Mm-hmm. You bring up some interesting points, you know, when it comes to toxic masculinity and figuring out where the line is between the gender roles that was previously, you know, entrenched in our society and where the new modern norm is, you know, when it comes to dealing with military, when it comes to dealing with hard labor. There is like a lot of questions of saying, oh, well, we are fair, but how come there isn't like as much equality in the hard labor jobs that require so much hard labor to do? I can understand that. And a lot of the jobs that are being taken up, you know, are focused on soft skills and white collar jobs. So I can see where you're coming from.
I mean, it's a self-selection process. Sorry to interrupt. It's a self-selection process. I was at the hospital, had to have some tests done on Tuesday. You know, it's, you go into a hospital and there is a tremendous amount of female workforce there. And they're self-selecting, right? They're going to school to become a nurse or a medical practitioner or a doctor. You go and go to the construction site that's across the street from our office, and you don't see many, you know, women masons or bricklayers because they're not selecting to do that job, right? What is toxic about the fundamental role of the job that a men select to do? I don't know. Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, most definitely. I don't think the toxicity is coming from the jobs. I think it's coming from some of the difficulties that come with the amount of time dedicated to those versus, you know, allocating energy and care. For example, I have a cousin of mine that is having troubles with her husband because he's working nonstop and her daughter isn't able to really develop that relationship with her father, you know, and he's just throwing money at her because he believes that providing is throwing money. And I think that's where it gets into toxicity because he's providing, but in terms of money, but isn't providing in terms of time and isn't providing in terms of care, and is missing out on key elements of her life, but has his mind on one track of providing through money versus providing through other elements. So I think that's like a prime example of toxic masculinity where you're one track minded on what the man's job is, instead of having a stronger spine to know what your friends and family really need in terms of care, you know? And I think...
Love that example.
Because they're locked in on the notion of society standards versus my family standards and my, you know, the people that care about me standards, you know? And I think that's what ignites the independence movement, because they might be provided for financially, but in terms of care, they're not provided for, you know? Which is challenging. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's break that down a little bit. First off, just pulling it a little bit back to, you know, mm-hmm. Tej Hanley and our mission. You know, our mission is to help all men look and feel amazing through mm-hmm. providing simplified skincare systems. Mm-hmm. All we can do is give guys some of what we believe in, which is it's important to take care of yourself. And if you follow simple, healthy routines in your life, eating, mm-hmm. working out, sleeping, taking care of your skin, brushing your teeth, mm-hmm. you know, it having healthy routines is an important part of your life. What you're talking about is what it's like to be a modern male. Our customers mm-hmm. tend to be modern men. Mm-hmm. You know, the original definition of a man is that we're good providers, right? And that we go out and we're right. It's this hunter-gatherer mentality, and we go out as hunters, and we bring back what the family needs to survive. And, you know, of course, things have evolved a lot. I mean, the modern male today is asked to do so much more, as the modern female does. I'm talking about males because that's who our customers are. But the mm-hmm. modern male today is expected to do a lot more than be a good hunter and gatherer. We're, mm-hmm. we need to be mindful of our family and of our children and of challenges that our wives have, or our spouses have, our significant others have. And we need to be more empathetic towards a family unit. This is much different than what my father was like, maybe your father, where we really were thinking about we provide and then you take care of everything else. And that's where this issue comes from. But being a modern male today means being more than just a provider. You need to be a good role model. You need to be there for the people that depend on you. You need to be there emotionally. You need, to the best that you can, need to participate in your family's lives. So this is, I think, by definition, where we are today for what the modern male is faced with. And it's hard, you know, just as it is hard being a female, just as it is hard whether or not you're a working woman or you're what we call in my house, my wife is my CFO. She's my chief family officer. Her role is equally as important as mine. Very equally as important. Completely different tasks, daily tasks, but equally important. I am no more important than my wife in our relationship, you know, than she is to me. We're equally important. Without her skill set, without what she does every day, there's not a chance I would be where I'm at. So this modern male is kind of where we're at. And we're all learning this together, how to be the best type of men we can be today. Being a provider is not enough.
Wow, that's a big statement. Being a provider is not enough.
No way.
Damn. All right. So what do you think is enough?
In terms of being a modern male?
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if you have the answer to that.
Of course I don't have the answer to that. I mean, you know, I have a, yeah. you know, I have a point of view. Look, I fail on that just as I think most men fail on that. What we need to be doing is trying our hardest and learning. Yeah. But I think it's brutal. I mean, it's unbelievably difficult, right? I mean, again, I'm not saying a woman's task or role is not easy. I'm not talking about that because I don't know about that. I'm saying a male's task is very difficult. You know, it's very difficult working all day. It doesn't matter what your occupation, manual labor, you know, work in office. Working all day, I don't know about you. I'm sure you do because you're a hustler. You're working 10 hours a day. Yep. And you got to go home. And you probably don't have much of a commute. Most people don't have much of a commute anymore. They go from their like their office or their study, you know, into their kitchen, and they're talking business and they're dealing with very stressful situations. They close the door and they go in and they've got their children running up and saying hi to them. They got their wife saying, I need you to go take out the trash and do this and that. You have zero time to go from all the stuff that the burdens of what you just dealt with over the last 8 hours into being dad or into being a good spouse or a good partner. Mm-hmm. You have no time at all. And it's, you know, and you wonder, society wonders why people are so dependent on, you know, drugs and alcohol and everything else. It's just like people are just, you know, they just need some downtime. Men need to be able to work really hard, and they, you know, hopefully they have a very supporting person in their lives that allows them and understands what they're doing all day long and helps them convert into being that good father that's empathetic and listening and there for their family. We all need help with that. I need help with that. I bet you do too.
100%. 100%. You know, right now, I don't have a family. You know, I plan on having a family soon. You know, I'm turning 31 this year. You know, as someone that's a CEO and a family man, you know, what advice do you have for me? You know, if you could go back to that 30-year-old self of yours, you know, I don't know, you probably look like 33 now, but
it's awesome. What advice do you have for me? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to give you some small, here is my advice. Do not marry crazy. Do not marry crazy. You know, you gotta marry somebody. And again, I don't really care about anybody's, you know, personal preferences. If they're gonna marry or have a spouse, you need to have a spouse that you can rely on, is dependable, that cares about you, that is, you know, willing to be the type of partner that you need to support kind of your goals, and you need to be able to support their goals. If you marry someone that's crazy, that's what I was talking about with Rob and Aaron, and I'm not implying either of them are crazy. That's not the case at all. But if there's things there that you're like, I love this person, but they drive me nuts because of these, they're fucking crazy. That shit is not changing. Mm. That shit is not changing, man. And in order for me to be who I am, the number one thing, I don't strip away everything. The number one thing is my choice in my wife, my choice in my spouse. My choice in my spouse was the difference between me being a successful person in my career or unsuccessful person. They right. allowed me to be the best that I could be because we were good fit and we were aligned with our values. Don't marry crazy, man.
No, yeah, you don't know how much that what you're saying resonates with me. Man, I think that's gonna touch a lot of guys. Be careful of the woman you marry. Yeah, I think that's some of the best financial advice too, you know. From what I hear, you know, the biggest decision you can make is marrying the right person. So what made you, you know, as Rick was wrapping up, what were some of the deciding factors that let you know that, hey, this woman is my wife?
Go to the fundamentals. Go to the fundamentals. You know, there's three things that drive me. I put everything in these three buckets. This is just me, okay? Mm-hmm. You do you. This is me. Bucket number one is God. And by the way, you can put anything, any belief system into that bucket. If you're Muslim, you put that in there. If you're Catholic or Christian or any Christian, you put that in there. You know, if you're Jewish, you put that in there. And then what does that mean to you? That means, you know, how you think, your morals. You know, do you participate in a community, right? A faith community. Do you believe in raising children within that faith community? Again, I'm not calling out a community. I'm saying you know, or a specific type of community. I'm saying, because I believe in, you know, people have a choice of religion. But that one thing really determines how you and your partnership think about, partner think about, you know, how you're going to raise your children, what you're going to do, spend your time, who you're going to associate with, where you're going to give your money, all that stuff. Second bucket, family. If you and your wife or your spouse or your significant other does not have the same thoughts about family, you're screwed. If you have no family life and you were born into an environment where your family was not very structured and your significant other has like a very structured family life and they meet every Thursday or else their parents, you know, disown them and they have dinner together and they play, you know, baseball together every Sunday and everything, you're going to be like, what the hell is going on here? Who am I marrying, you or your family? So I think you got to like figure out the family connection, and that may make sense to you, but, and then it, you know, it depends, and all, a lot of stuff falls into that bucket, you know, children, where do you send your children to school? Where do you spend your holidays? What do you do for this thing, this vacation and that vacation? So much fits in the family bucket. And then the last is money. And money means everything too. It means career, means economic stability. It means how much money do you guys want to look, if you guys are both, you know, public servants, you're both going to be teachers. Phenomenal. As long as you have the same expectations about how many times you're going to Disneyland, what type of car you're going to drive and all that stuff. So those are the three things I would like focus on. Those three things. It's not about necessarily what I was saying before, like, you know, if your spouse is really messy, you know, that's an element, and yeah, you can somewhat correct for that, but it's the big things that you got to get right. My book, my humble opinion, where are you guys on God? And if you're both atheists, that's fine too. Where are you guys in family, and where are you guys financially? And get alignment in those three, you're probably off to a pretty good start.
Big gems. Very big gems, man. I feel like on that note, we can wrap up, man. Yeah. I think a lot of our guys are going to take a lot of gems from this. Fellas, if you're listening, yo, comment below. Listen, this is all for free. This is from a guy who's been there, done it, you know, and went through the battle scars. You know, actually, I have one last question, you know.
Yeah.
And this is going back to business, and we can wrap on this. For the D2C guys, you know, that are like, all right, I want to jump into the market now and start marketing my XYZ business, you know, where do you see the market going in terms of, one, how to market, how to, you know, treat the new landscape of social media, and... Yeah, I'll let you go from there.
Yeah, man. You know, so there is this talk, right, that DTC is dead or it's not the right time to get in. Like, I actually take that with a grain of salt. I think it's a great time to get into DTC. I think it's an awesome time. There's no better way to communicate your brand than to have a direct relationship with your consumer. You know, I mean, there's just no better way. Is it incredibly hard? Absolutely. Is it expensive? Absolutely. But there's no better way to have a brand than to have a direct relationship with a consumer. And, you know, timing is important, very, very important. But execution is more important. Executing well in business trumps, you know, pretty much anything else. So, If you can execute really well in the DTC space, sky's the limit. Go for it.
Awesome. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, this is what you can control. So control your grind and control your life. I'm Alex.
I'm Kelly.
There you go. And that's the show, y'all. Peace.